Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Texans in border communities used to cross back and forth freely with little to no documentation. Just a simple U.S. citizen or American citizen to the agent at the bridge, and he or she would wave you back into the U.S. Much has changed since the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001. The 9/11 Commission in 2004 determined the border crossing rules were too lax, and Congress passed the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, which required U.S. border crossers to possess passports or passport cards to cross the international ports of entry. Mexican travelers are required to carry a border crossing card. The complexities of international travel can be mind-twisting to someone who's new to it. Andres Rodriguez is a representative of the U.S. State Department's Office of Passport Services. He says the proper documentation will ensure you'll be processed more efficiently.
When you have lines of people crossing on foot or in cars, every morning, every day, there's going to be a backlog. And so it just makes for a good crowd control, if you will, if you have some sort of machine-readable document that allows an officer to verify a person's identity with a photo and citizenship. However, we know that there are people who are still using paper birth certificates. And so I was just at the border this week, and I saw people pulling out their paper documents, and some are taped up, some are very old. And it just makes for a less secure and less efficient border crossing experience because, well, it's your proof of citizenship. And so if you're handling a piece of paper for years every day, it's bound to get beat up. And it's just not a really secure or ideal way to handle such an important document. And so for that reason, we really, really recommend that people try to get a passport, either a passport book or card, if they're going to be crossing into Mexico.
And so the passport itself actually allows for safe entry into the U.S.
Correct.
So what kind of documentation do U.S. citizens need to get into Mexico? Before we started taping, you were telling us about a couple of interesting instances in which a passport is required to get beyond a certain point in Mexico.
There's international protocols that the airlines have to follow or else they're fined. And if a U.S. citizen is going to board an international flight, then they have to present a passport book in order to board the airplane. There's enforcement there. Along the border, it's a different story. Again, you have daily crossers, tens of thousands of people. And so the enforcement to get into Mexico, I personally did not experience anyone checking my documents when I crossed into Mexico. It's when you re-enter the United States where there is enforcement. When I was down in Laredo earlier this week, I crossed into Nuevo Laredo, where we have a U.S. consulate. The purpose of the consulate in Nuevo Laredo and all of our consulates around the world, the consulates are meant to provide services to U.S. citizens, which could be issuing U.S. passports. It could be registering U.S. births abroad. And then we also issue visas to non-U.S. citizens. They also issue the border crossing card out of our consulates in Mexico. So when I was at the consulate, my colleagues there have seen an increase in the amount of emergency U.S. passports that they've been issuing. Upon further investigation, we have found that the Mexican authorities are enforcing U.S. passports for U.S. citizens who are crossing beyond a certain point in Mexico. Now, the distance varies. We have found that in Nuevo Laredo specifically, there's a highway that goes directly to Monterrey, where there's an international airport. It's further into the country. And in that specific area of Mexico, there's mile marker 26, where there is a Mexican border control, if you will, where they are ensuring that cars from the United States have a temporary registration sticker They're also making sure that American citizens have their passports. And if they don't have the temporary registration sticker or a U.S. passport, they are being sent back. When that happens, and it's a shock to many people, because I think that this is very new for individuals who have maybe crossed before and haven't encountered this, they come to our consulate asking for assistance, specifically with a passport. We have the ability to issue emergency passports to citizens who we can verify their U.S. citizenship and identity. Someone will go into the consulate, verify those things, pay, and they will walk out with a temporary emergency passport book, which they then take to the local Mexican authorities to register their U.S. car. You pay a fee, there's a deposit, and they're issued a sticker that goes on the windshield. And with that, they're then allowed to travel beyond kilometer marker 26 and continue on their journey. I met with a mother, a young mother. She had three children. And she was at the consulate getting an emergency passport because she fell into the same exact scenario. She was from Alabama. She was married to a Mexican citizen who had been deported. So she was driving into Mexico to reunite with her husband and her three children. In 2011, she had also crossed by bus. This year was different. She got into Mexico with her three children and her U.S. registered car. She got to kilometer marker 26, where she found out that she needed the temporary registration and her U.S. passports. She had to drive back to the consulate, where she had to get emergency passports for her family. So she traveled with her birth certificate. So luckily she had those, because when she got to the consulate, we were able to verify citizenship, their ID. She paid all the costs. And she was able to walk away with her emergency passports, and then she proceeded to the car registration agency, and eventually she was going to be able to continue her journey. So you multiply this by thousands of people per year. We are issuing a lot more emergency passports at the consulate because of this, and there can be backlogs at the car registration facility in Mexico. That office actually told me about three times a year where they encounter enormous crowds because of the paisano season. The paisano season is where people with family ties in Mexico travel to Mexico by car, either for summer, for Easter celebrations, Pascua, and for winter travel, the holiday season. And so you have three main periods of throughout the year where you have enormous amount of border crossings into Mexico. The backlogs are really crazy. They showed me photos of hour-long waits of people trying to register their cars. Many of them don't have proper documentation for their U.S.-born children or family members, that whole process that I mentioned repeats itself. Yes, you do need a passport to travel to Mexico, especially if you're going to travel further in beyond a certain perimeter, beyond the border region in Mexico, and definitely if you're going to be taking a U.S.-registered car.
And I think anybody who's ever had to fill out a passport application, they kind of tear their hair out in frustration because it's pretty lengthy. It's a little complicated. But as you were saying, it does act as a backup form of ID. But talk us through a little bit about, you know, the different types of passports, because, again, a lot of people who maybe are new to Texas, they come from other parts of the U.S. who don't necessarily do a lot of international travel. Mm-hmm. They think, hey, maybe I'll go to Mexico this weekend, not mm-hmm. realizing that they do need this documentation to get them back into the United States or get them past a certain point in Mexico. Talk about the different types of passports available. If you're doing just a typical standard application, how long it may take for them to finally get that, and what the special instances are for expedited travel. Like you were saying, that emergency travel for the people who are being sent back to the consulate because of their vehicle registration. But there are other instances like, a death in the family where you are going to have to be in Mexico very quickly before burial.
So there's two types of passports for tourism. There's the blue passport book, traditional passport book, and then there's the passport card, which looks like a credit card. And so the passport card is actually less expensive than the passport book. The main differences beyond cost is how you use them. The passport book is good for any type of international travel, air, land, sea. The passport card is good for land and sea travel to Mexico, Canada, the Caribbean, and then also the cost. So if you're in our world, in the passport world, we consider adults to be 16 and over. So for anyone 16 and over applying for the first time for the book, it's $145. And for the card, it's $65. But if you already have a passport book and you just want to get the card, it's $30 for an adult. For a child 15 or under, the book is $115. And the card is $50. The difference also is with adults 16 and over, the validity is for 10 years. For 15 and under, the validity is 5 years. And many parents don't remember that when they book trips, or sometimes even when they get to the airport, they realize that children do have shorter validity for their passports. Then for expedited travel or for emergency travel, there are some options. If you were to go to the post office or a public library, you have a choice of paying for regular service or expedited service. So routine or regular service right now takes about 6 to 8 weeks average. Or you could pay $60 more for expedited, and that's taking about 2 to 3 weeks. Also, if you already have a 10-year passport and you just want to renew, you can actually do it by mail. That costs $110 for regular service, but if you needed that expedited 2 to 3 weeks, you could pay $60 more for that. Now, emergency travel. We have 3 agencies in the state of Texas. You go in, you apply, and you can actually walk out with a passport. They're issued right there in the facility, not necessarily same day. So the agencies are in El Paso, Dallas, and Houston. You have to be traveling within 2 weeks, and you have to prove that with an itinerary. And then, of course, if there's life or death situations, we work with individuals to make sure that they are issued their passports in time. $60 more, again, you're paying the expedite fee, but you can feasibly walk out of the agency with the passport depending on your travel.
We are talking with Andres Rodriguez, a representative of the U.S. State Department's Office of Passport Services. When we come back, undocumented parents with U.S.-born children sometimes are hesitant when seeking travel documents for their kids.
We don't ask about the status of parents. That's not our jurisdiction. We just want to ensure that the parents of this U.S. citizen child are in fact their parents.
More with Andres Rodriguez coming up next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Americans like to plan getaways to Europe, Asia, Russia, or even deeper into the Mexican interior. Maybe it's for a family vacation, a backpacking tour, or a school trip of a lifetime. Travelers into Mexico may unknowingly find themselves in areas riddled with cartel violence. The Mexican state of Tamaulipas, which lies across the border from Laredo, McAllen, and Brownsville, has the same level 4 travel warning as Afghanistan, Iraq, and North Korea. But border crossers who live in those communities still travel freely back and forth to shop or visit family. Andres Rodriguez is a representative with the Office of Passport Services at the U.S. State Department. He says travelers should always be aware of travel warnings issued for different countries and different regions within those countries.
So the State Department does issue travel advisories for every country in the world. The levels are 1 through 4. Level 1 is travel as you would, taking the normal precautions. Level 2 is practice increased awareness, take increased precautions. Level 3 is rethink travel. And then level 4 is do not travel. As a country, Mexico is categorized as level 2, which is increased precautions. And then within Mexico, we actually have various levels of travel advisories. And you are correct. That area, that region, that state in Mexico is listed as a level 4, do not travel, because of crime and kidnappings. However, American citizens do have family there and maybe do business. If someone has to travel to that area of Mexico, there's various levels. Obviously, knowing where the nearest consulate is, going to our page on our website, travel.state.gov, you can look up each country. We have, you know, detailed specific information about why we have issued this travel advisory, why this state is categorized as level 4. And there you will find specific details on why we are actually telling you do not travel to this region. We offer a service called the Safe Travel Enrollment Program. It's a registration for travelers, and they go online to our website, step.state.gov. You create an account, basically. You register yourself and your trip with us. And so if there's any need for communication with you, we can actually contact you via email. But aside from that, we think it's most prudent for you to stay in touch with your loved ones, because they're the first ones to worry if there's a lack of communication, if you're not checking in. They are going to be the first ones probably to call us in an emergency situation.
So recently there was an instance of a U.S.-born citizen who, he was a teenager, he had been detained for over 3 weeks. It was national news. He was detained in Edinburgh, if I'm not mistaken, and taken to the Pearsall Detention Facility. He had some conflicting documentation. He had proof of American citizenship, yet he also had a Mexican traveler's visa to the United States. And this might sound confusing to many people, but I think individuals who are undocumented, who have U.S.-born children, they probably don't have the correct documentation for their children to ensure that they're identified as U.S. citizens. So a lot of non-citizen, a lot of undocumented parents who have U.S.-born children might be living under some sort of a fear that if they try to find the right documentation for their children, maybe they'll be deported, or maybe the parents have already been deported and they have U.S.-born children with them in Mexico. What advice would you give to individuals in those circumstances?
In general, when we issue a passport, we look for ID. We want to know that the person is who they are. And we want to match the ID with the proof of U.S. citizenship, which is in general a birth certificate from one of the states. So with children, we need two-parent consent. So let's just say a child's parents are not U.S. citizens. In this scenario, we just want to make sure that the parents are in fact the parents of the U.S.-born child. So we're going to look at the U.S. birth certificate, number one, and then we're going to look at who the parents are. And we're going to need to ensure that the parents appearing with the child are those people, individuals listed on the birth certificate. So we ask for ID from the parents. Most people can present a driver's license, state-issued driver's license, state-issued ID card, U.S. passport. However, non-citizen parents need to identify themselves also. In the case of Mexican national parents, they can actually ID themselves with a Mexican passport or their consular ID. It's called a matricula consular. And Mexican nationals can get both of those documents at one of, I believe it's 52 Mexican consulates around the United States. We don't ask about the status of parents. That's not our jurisdiction. We just want to ensure that the parents of this U.S. citizen child are in fact their parents. And so in order to do that, we need government-issued ID. And if parents don't have citizenship, U.S. citizenship, then we need some sort of government-issued ID to tell us that they are in fact who they say they are. And then speaking of the two-parent consent, when a child is 15 or under, we need two-parent consent. If there's one parent listed on the birth certificate, then we'll only need that one individual's ID. But oftentimes we see that there are two parents, but one isn't around. One
could be deceased or not in the country anymore.
Correct. Yeah. Many, many different cases. But we need to account for that person who's listed on the birth certificate. So in the case of a death, death certificate. In the case of a divorce, then we'll need to look at a divorce decree, see who has custody. Sometimes a parent is outside of the country. Maybe they've been deported. In that case, we're still going to need their consent to issue the passport here in the United States. So scenario could be father's deported, mother's here in the United States with the child. Two options. Fill out an official form. We call it the DS-3053. Or they can handwrite an authorization. I, name, authorize this person to issue a passport for our child, signed, dated, notarized. Both types of authorization need to be notarized. Copy of their ID. The authorization needs to be sent to the parent in the United States who's applying for the passport. And then they can proceed with the passport application. Now, another situation we find is that a parent is in deportation proceedings here in the United States, but in custody. In this scenario, if the parent who's wanting to get a passport for the child can give us the information of what's going on, the name, date of birth, place of birth of the detained parent, and we can then proceed to verify that they are in custody, and then we can work with the parent to then hopefully issue a passport for the child.
We've been talking to Andres Rodriguez, a representative with the Office of Passport Services at the U.S. State Department. For more information on the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, visit step.state.gov. And for more information on what's required to apply for a passport, visit travel.state.gov. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.